The setting is one that would horrify most. War, genocide, other occurrences, negative aspects of humanity that many in the Western world are unaware of. How does one cope with such tragic conditions? What salvation, even simple, temporary salvation, is there? Well, beyond hate and genocide and war and all of the things that come with them, there is a force far more powerful than any tyrant can calculate. An inner yearning, an internal fire, a divine spark demanding to be heard, felt, lived. And no matter what the circumstances, there are those who will hold up the torch and light the way. Sometimes we all need help. Today, we discuss the survival of that inner voice, the powerful force within. Welcome to Main Street Universe. And welcome to another Wednesday edition of Main Street Universe, the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And I don't know about you, but I can imagine a lot. And remember that each episode is recorded in our archive section and posted on our Facebook page as well. And what does this mean? This means that next week you can listen to last week this week on our Main Street Universe page and archive section. And I would like to welcome my co-hostess, Janice. How are you today?
I'm fine. How is everybody today?
Doing well. Very well. We were coming off of a very fun party this week, my brother's 50th birthday party. I can't believe it, but it's true. He is now 50 years old. And it was a fun day. We were out there at the Fire Station Bar and Grill, and a lot of family and old friends we hadn't seen in a long time, some of them as long as 26 years. Mm-hmm. We're on stage playing together again after all these years.
So cool.
Yeah, it was fun. I'd like to remind everybody that every Thursday we have a show, Zarayana Radio, with our host, Evan Pass, discussing the importance of myth in our lives. And on Friday evenings from 6 to 7, my former co-host, Mr. Kevin Baird, psychic medium intuitive consultant, has his show, Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle's Journey. And his oracle deck is not just about coming to him for readings, but for you learning yourself.
Which is always important.
Oh, yes. And it's still fun to get readings from other people, even when you are an experienced reader. I know I enjoy that. I like seeing, sometimes you just want the external person to come in and have a different
view of what you feel.
He can be reached, Kevin can be reached at www.templeofgaia.com. And it's Walking on the Sidewalk is the name of his show. I'd also like to make another announcement, and that is here I am looking at the publication for Radio Fairfax and World International Radio. And our co-hostess, Janice, is now featured. Her show is in their official publication, The World Reggae Party. Did you want to speak about it?
Yes. It's on Thursdays between 7 and 8, and it's an hour, and it's all dedicated to the phenomena that reggae is and that it's all over the world. I have found musicians from as close as Canada and as far as Iraq. Yes, there is two Iraqi reggae artists. I don't know what they're saying on there, but the beat is fabulous. So,
a language in this case.
Yes, yes. And I have a ball there every Thursday, except for this Thursday because it's my mom's birthday and I won't be there. But every Thursday I'm there and I'll spend an hour of reggae hits and sometimes give you some information about what's going on in the reggae world. And I'm hoping to get some guests pretty soon because this area has reggae artists as well. Not so much in Fairfax, but in D.C., there's a lot of reggae artists, so I hope to have somebody on the air pretty soon so I can interview him or her and we can get to know our neighbors in the D.C. area who sing reggae.
Absolutely. And it's a bit on our theme today, and our theme is about positive and artistic things that come about. And for the purposes of today's show, we're talking about in oftentimes war-torn or devastated areas or places of oppression or just of a natural disaster or something of that nature. So the side of the human spirit, the creative side of the human spirit existing and expressing itself in troubled times, I guess you could say. So it is good to hear that there's reggae artists from Iraq.
Yes.
And I'm sure they have hip hop and metal there too.
Well, this one guy, I don't know, I can't recall his name right now, but he's actually wanted by the government because not only is he singing reggae, but he's also singing anti-government music, and he's wanted. So he's keeping a very low profile because it's sort of the same thing that happened with Salman Rushdie.
Yes, I remember.
About 10 years back, about that he was, you know, people were out to kill him and he was in hiding. This guy's doing basically the same thing.
And apparently we have a caller. I think we'll go ahead and take this caller.
Okay.
Let me click on that microphone. And this is 847. Are you there,
Hello.
847? Hello,
I'm
how
here.
Are you?
Hello?
I'm not sure what your show is about, but I did read it, and it said you do tarot readings. Is that all right? Are you doing that today?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, great.
We were going to wait till a little later, but I can go ahead and give you a quick reading if you like, because we haven't started our official topic yet, so we'll go ahead and do that if you like. Do you want something general or something specific?
Okay, I come from a family where I'm the youngest. I was abused, scapegoat, punching bag. My parents are dead. I don't talk to a sister. My other sister, I feel like I've been stuck with a responsibility that should be the three of us, and they have way more than I do, and I'm a single mom, and I really don't have anything. And it's gotten to the point where I have to talk to the one sister who I do have somewhat of a relationship with about, you know, taking responsibility, which she thinks is mine. And she is a loose cannon, and she does not get the facts. She assumes, she judges. How do you see it going?
Okay. I'm going to pull a couple of cards here. And normally I don't get or ask for that much
information, yeah.
Okay, it's just, I'm just giving you kind of a...
But that's perfectly all right.
Okay.
You're in a situation, obviously... I will base the question around just a general, what the universe has for you, has in mind for you.
Right, I'm in a lose-lose situation once again with my family.
What I'm going to do is divide the cards into three piles. We pick from pile one, two, or three.
Okay. Oh, three.
Three, okay, now pick one or two.
One.
Pile one or two? Well, one just fell, so I'm going to go with that one, and then we know what the final one will be. So here comes. Okay. And perhaps Janice can help us with this.
Okay.
The three cards I have are the Page of Swords, the Knight of Cups reversed, which is definitely, I think, what she's feeling a little bit of here, because Knight of Cups is a card of emotion. And it is also... can also represent artistic things as well, but this is, you feel like you're emotionally very much stagnant. You're not moving forward. You're not the knight on the horse going forward. And the last one is the Queen of Swords. I'm viewing this one as part of the solution or part of the message the universe is trying to give you. And that message is the Queen of Swords is a queen of calmness. She's often depicted as the lonely queen. This is, you have to step away
from the situation,
from the muddiness and the emotional mucky muck here. This is about floating above this, remaining calm, and sort of retreating into your own wisdom. It's a very wise sort of female intuitive wisdom combined. Swords is of air and air is of intellect. So it's combining intuitive female wisdom with getting away from these situations.
Getting away from the situation.
And remaining calm. You're not becoming too emotional, too involved in the emotional murkiness here. And I'll draw another card as another sort of final clarifier of that. But I think Janice and I both said almost the same thing in stereo on that. So I'm going to draw one more pile, one, two, or three.
Well, the Page of Swords is usually a youth, usually a male youth. But in this situation, it seems like there's a lot of immature people that are in your path, and they're causing the friction. Like you had said that there was people in your family that don't want to take responsibility for themselves, so they look to you to... have the responsibility for them or to give them the responsibility, and that's not really your job. Everybody after the age of 21 is responsible for their own life, and a lot of people don't seem to know that, and they have older brothers and sisters that would pretty much fall for them, as in they will take the problems themselves, but everybody has problems these days. So you can't really have this.
That is correct, too, because my sister's 55, and you approach her, and she's, you know, defensive, a loose cannon. She throws it back at you like a hot potato, you know, and she's 55.
Yes.
And what I'd like you to do is pick. I'm going to pull one more card for kind of another solution card here, and pick pile one, two, or three.
You know, you keep screaming at me, but it doesn't feel like the right one to pick, so I'll pick three.
What I'll do is I'll keep... Okay. I went ahead and went with them both. And because you already picked it with your mind and with your spirit. But what I'm getting from this, the first one, is the page. Again, we're back to a youth, a bit of acting youthful. But this one's a message of good earthly wisdom, in a way, because this is the page of coins.
Yes.
So this page isn't bringing you sort of the...
It's not bringing you the money, but it's giving you the insight that say that you can go on and get away from these immature people and just thrust on so you can have abundance in your own wisdom and abundance in your own intellect.
And what I also got from that, and I'm agreeing with Janice there, but what I'm getting from this, it's the page of Pentacles upright, meaning our final wisdom solution card was the Queen of Swords, and it's a very good one to have. To me, that's saying that this is a good, solid message to listen to that, to get away from some of this pettiness and use the integrated wisdom of the earth, as coins are an earth sign card. Or otherwise, and that's why, because you picked it and were unsure, that's why I'm saying this one was that renegade card. Otherwise, you're the High Priestess in reverse. Your intuitive wisdom that is not to be recognized, because the High Priestess is a deeply spiritual card, and this is obviously deeply bothering you. So they are stifling you on a very deep...
On a deep emotional level.
And it's all the signs here are telling us for you to... You really have to back off and to do so with calmness. That's what the Queen of Swords is about. This is not backing off and telling them all to go... You know, to go where to go. This is being intelligent, cool leadership, and showing them that you can float above the petty emotions and sort of move on without their silliness. And that's what I'm getting from this reading.
And then also that fits with, you know, they're like, you're in the past. They're keeping me in the past because they're on automatic pilot with the way that they treat me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You treat me like it's the past, and then you're upset with me because I'm in the past, but it's like you're holding me there. Do you understand? And I know I'm responsible, but I'm starting to see as I'm processing this that they're holding me there.
Right.
And then blame, and then, you know, get out of the past. And that's, I think, nobody takes any responsibility for anything.
Right, and like I said, after the age of 21, it's your time to take responsibility for your own personal actions and your own personal experiences.
Yeah. So, I think.
Do you get it all? My sister's reaction after I do write a letter or whatever I do.
I will draw a card for that.
Thank you.
Reaction, and if you. Okay, one actually fell out of the deck, and it's sideways.
Okay.
Well, it's oftentimes when they fall out of the deck, and Janice might agree with me, and if they're sideways, just like they are in the classic Celtic cross, they're considered the obstacle or the problem, or considered to be inverted. This one is justice inverted, which means to me she's probably going to have an unbalanced, ridiculous reaction.
Yes.
That's my purpose. But it might be for her own good because it is the justice card after all, even though it is reversed. Reversed.
That's what I'm trying to see. She's going to turn into a loose cannon. But you know what? I don't think that I should have to get everything dumped on me all the time because she doesn't want to deal with anything when I've already dealt 1,000 times more than she has.
Right.
It's not
fair
anymore. I can't do it.
And again, the calm, unemotional leadership approach, the Queen of Swords, is the main answer card here. Pull back, do a little internal searching, be calm, stay out of the mucky muck, even though that's difficult, I'm not saying that's easy, I'm just saying, but don't get too wrapped up in the emotion of the response. Keep your calm leadership skills about you, as is the wise, intuitive leader, that's the Queen of Swords.
But, you know, and also see how I have to be the better person and the bigger person, and when my life has been more traumatic than hers, that I always have to be the better and the bigger person, you know?
I understand.
Yes.
Well, I hope that reading was helpful. I have a feeling it's
thank
like...
Thank you. Are you on Facebook? I mean, can do you have a Facebook page or...
Yes, there is a,
can
there
I
is a Main Street Universe
or...
Facebook page.
Yes.
What is it?
It's the name of the show is Main Street Universe.
Universe,
okay. And we do have a Facebook page and presence. And you can also send me a personal email on Blog Talk Radio. I have so if you go to Main Street Universe or Daniel Michael, there's a message section. So if you want any more information, it is there as well.
Okay.
And you can send
Main
me a message.
Main Street
I can get
Universe.
Main
okay.
Street
Universe, yes.
Thank you so much for, you know, putting me ahead of everything else and doing this for me.
Okay, quite all right.
Have a
thank
good day,
you.
Man.
Thank you,
you
very
thank
much.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay. And now the microphone is going. Here we go. Okay. So, yes, that is always part of our show. Sometimes I announce after the topic, but that's okay. I don't mind. I like participation. And this is our flagship community show.
Very much.
And that's why this show is the most like that. Like, I have somebody coming over today that might be here at the end of the show to talk about some stuff. So we're getting back to our topic. And our topic was finding strength and beautiful things and artistic things or just good human behavior in terrible, tragic, and war-torn even conditions. Showing the balance in the universe. Because, yes, there's good and bad. But it's also good in this world of tragic news every time you turn on headline news to also talk about some of the interesting or good news that's out there.
Yes.
So that's part of today's focus. And when I first opened up the show, we were discussing the Congo. That was the region I was mentioning in my opener before the song kicked in. And in the Congo, you know, there's been much poverty and war, that terrible genocide that happened years ago. And a lot of people don't know that in this very impoverished country that there is a fully functioning 200-member classically, I mean highly classically trained symphony orchestra. The conductor and creator, his name is Armand, and he's a former commercial pilot. He started an orchestra with no musicians, no music, and no teachers. The conductor, being a commercial pilot, did award him a slightly better living than many of his neighbors. Like, he had a fairly nice house, very much fenced in, but that commercial airline closed down. And he said, well, I'm going to start an orchestra. And he had nothing to do it with. So
he's very brave.
Absolutely. And I like the story that some of his neighbors there in the Congo said, but people from Congo fall asleep to classical music. They're not going to want to do this. They say it puts them to sleep. But he loved classical music and was determined to start an orchestra. So he relied on donated instruments and repaired instruments. And I saw the video from this, and I might post it on the Main Street Universe.
I definitely
Facebook.
Want to see it.
And some of these instruments were just destroyed. He had a really good luthier or, you know, musical repairman there fixing instruments that were donated. Some were bought from thrift shops. Some were just found. And they put a lot of them back together. So they basically used whatever was available. And they recalled one story where a bicycle brake wire was used. They pulled a brake wire off of a bicycle and used it for a violin string because they broke a violin string and had no more violin string.
I love stuff
like that, how people find a way
to make things happen.
Absolutely. He used his house, Armand, the conductor creator of this orchestra, used his house to teach music to very poor students who play for free. As of yet, as at least in the update of the story I got, these are not a paid symphony orchestra, though I'd love to see that change as they gain some more attention around the world. But they do receive instruction for free, and it's just something.
Yes.
Some of them walk miles and miles and miles to go there every day.
Yes.
After working in the market or whatever they attempt to do in a very impoverished country, and walk a long way to receive free instruction and be part of the symphony orchestra. They did finally get it all together, and it took a while, because get this, he taught himself how to play guitar, piano, and cello.
Oh, this is a very gifted guy.
Absolutely. Without instruction, he did it, I think, from books and just taught himself, and taught himself how to read music. He didn't even read music before this, then taught himself all these instruments. So he finally pieces this thing together, does a public performance, or a series of them. Two German filmmakers happen to be there filming a documentary in the Congo.
Wow.
And they happen to catch this orchestra, and they were very surprised to see this Congolese orchestra playing this extremely European music. And this drew the curiosity of German musicians once this documentary got back to their home country. So they sat down some interested, I mean highly, highly classically trained master musicians and teachers to the Congo to come help to teach this orchestra for free.
Very, very gifted.
It was just a fascinating thing to watch. One of my favorite parts of this thing was when the interviewer of this story said how music is truly the international language.
Very much so.
There was a German person teaching a French-speaking African person how to sing with proper diction in Italian, to do an Italian opera or whatever it was. So I thought this was a fascinating story. I'll probably put it up on my Facebook page, and it is a video. And during an interview with one of the African musicians, he refers to the exact day that he joined the orchestra, and this was a common thing there. The people would say, oh, I joined, you know, September 5th, 2001. And the guy noticed this, and he said, I notice everybody remembers the day they joined. And the musician then said, that's the day we were born again. We remember it like it's our birthday.
Oh.
That's like the powerful effect.
Wow. Music is very healing to the soul.
Absolutely. And our next story is about a cellist in Sarajevo. His name was Vedran Smolovic. The setting is the 1990s in war-torn Sarajevo. The siege of Sarajevo, originally by the Yugoslav People's Army, then by Bosnian Serb forces, it is known as the longest siege of a capital city in the history of modern warfare. It's one of those issues a lot of people don't know a lot of details about, and I'll admit I'm not necessarily an expert on that conflict. It was one that happened in the 1990s. The siege was successful in diminishing the city's population by 250,000 people by the time it was all over. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and 24 hours after the mortar had fallen on his friends and neighbors. They were waiting in line to buy bread. A man bends down to pick up his bow. He will carry his cello and stool down a narrow flight of stairs to the empty street. The war will go on all around him. And as it does, this man will sit in the crater. This is the crater caused by the mortar shell at the point of impact, and he will play his cello. This cellist will play Albinoni's Adagio. He will continue to do this, or he will attempt to do this every day for 22 days, a day for each person killed. The mortar, it screamed downward, splitting air, splitting the sky without effort. A target expands in size, brought into focus by time and velocity. There is a moment before impact that is the last instant of things as they were. Then the visible world explodes. And what I just read was an outtake from a book called The Cellist of Sarajevo. Now, it's based on a true story of Vedran Smolovic. It has been argued by some that the cellist mentioned did, in fact, not go out every day at the same time for exactly 22 days. That's not necessarily the point, though. The point is, it is a true story that he went out into these buildings destroyed by bombs with a war going on all around him to play songs on his cello. It felt like the only hope for him to grab onto during this war-torn time. And this brings me to our point, and this was in specifically in between about 1992 and 1996. Again, it's one of the longest sieges there was. And Vedran Smolovic, who did later on appear in a Joan Baez video, did see the value of music in these stressful situations. And a lot of people say sound is magic. And in my opinion, yes, even if you are deaf, you can feel
the vibrations.
For example, I know knew when I was younger, a deaf girl who would go to the club, one with really loud music, and just be right next to the speakers and either lean on them or sit on them or put her hands on them to feel the vibration of the sound. So Vedran Smolovic became known worldwide. There's a book about him and some documentaries for his going out and playing in these abandoned buildings to honor those killed in those buildings. One was a library I remember seeing a picture of. Our next story takes us to a different time, but still in Europe. In 1942, a talented violinist who had performed and had known a highly successful career touring Europe and forming her own women's orchestra. She was arrested by the Gestapo, the secret police of the Nazi German police state. She eventually found herself in Auschwitz. Auschwitz is one of a network of concentration and extermination camps found in southern Poland at the time. Her name was Alma Rose. While in Auschwitz, Alma realized that she may be exterminated. So she requested, as a last wish, to play a violin. And this is a true story again, folks. She was granted this. Then the camp's supervisor, who was very impressed, assigned her to lead a woman's orchestra. So her life had now been spared. She was literally playing for her life and teaching. This orchestra became the only chance for the survival of many of the women who would become her students. Alma did attempt to let in whoever she could into the orchestra. Even the girls that were not so talented. Imagine the pressure she was feeling. She had to pick worthy musicians or risk her own extermination.
Right.
It wasn't good enough. While at the same time trying to bring as many girls as she could into this thing so that they might live, so that they may survive. And basically the result being is scared inmates playing in front of SS guards. Mm-hmm. And again, quite literally playing for their own existence and survival. Some say that even the SS overlords could be seen weeping with emotion at the front row of these concerts. Now, unfortunately, Alma Rose died, or passed on, as I would say, in Auschwitz, April 5th, 1944. The survivors said that playing in her orchestra transformed them into another place, temporarily beyond their current circumstances. And that was the only time they felt lifted away from that concentration camp. So that was just another example of, in history, how music, though not exactly saving the day, does come in and become sort of that temporary salvation I mentioned in the opener. Sort of a transcendental experience to lift you out of whatever, either the mundane or the tragic situation you may find yourself in, or these people may have found themselves in. And so these things continue to come out in history and are not always based on art. I was thinking, since I'm a musician, I would just speak to something that spoke to me. There's also great stories in history of, yes, though there's bad out there, sometimes when a tragedy occurs, it can bring out the good or the inspiration in people.
Inside people.
So like when Katrina in New Orleans happened, for example, I've read a few books about the various things people did. Yes, there were the rioters and looters, but there were also the people, you know, offering their homes and using them as shelters and offering services and food and whatever they could to help each other out. Some of them formed their own little, you know, groups. And so it's always interesting to see how in a situation, whether it be war or extreme poverty or a natural disaster, can at times bring out the good in people and even at times true creative inspiration in people.
Yes.
Now I'd like to go on to an issue that's kind of going on today, one that people think about a lot, a conversation that comes up a lot, and the people of India are definitely feeling, and that are some of these rolling blackouts.
So what I want to talk about today is the blackouts that were in India. That was in July 30th, 2012 to July 31st, 2012. It had started in Indian time about 2:35 International Standard Time. Now, you know, when it's daytime in India, it's nighttime here. So I would believe that was about in the early mornings in India. What had started with the Bina Wala line was tripped, and that's a very big power source in India. And when that had tripped, two more had tripped as well. And it started to be a million people at the beginning, but it ended up having about 700 million people without power. And they were without power, according to the news sources that I read about, for two whole days. So 48 hours they were out of power, and had affected 22 of 28 of the provinces and the states of India. So many people were affected by this power outages. And everything in New Delhi, as well as Punjab and Haryana and Upper Pradesh, and I apologize if I'm not saying these states right, everything had shut down. Everything had shut down. The trains that haul at least a million people back and forth, they had shut down. Hospitals had to refuse taking new patients in because they didn't have any power. And apparently the backup generators that were in most of these hospitals also were lacking. People that were supposed to be cremated end up being half cremated during this particular time because the fires that went out. Because most of India, from what I'm taking, is run on electricity, where, you know, here we have a choice of electricity or coal or gas. We also have the solar power and the wind power, but in India, most of their power comes from electricity, which is why 700 million people were without power. And there's a couple things that happen that cause this. And one of the things that it's noted in The Economist, which is how I heard about the article, is beyond the poverty of India. And you know, India has way more poverty than we have. There's three problems that loom large about how this had started very small and end up having such a big impact. One of the issues is the narrow fault lines that are in India, which cause the blackouts, that there are a large amount of people in a very small space. And these narrow fault lines are very small and was really created where they didn't have as many people in India as they have right now. The second problem is the wider division of the poor. It's a very, very, very poor country, and it's pretty much a very large division between the poor and the rich. And the rich use a lot of power, but the poor also use a lot of power in India to have their day go by. And the third state is the shoddy state of the infrastructure in the country. Because when I think of India before this article, you know, I'm thinking about a lot of animals doing the work, and that's not the case. Maybe in some of the poor sections of India, but in the cities, they're using a lot of power, a lot more power than we use, and we in America use a lot of power. So if we use a lot of power and we have less than 700 million people, you can imagine what they're using to heat up their power plants, their homes, their businesses. So, like I said, it started in 2:30 in the morning, International Standard Time, and it started off very small, about 10% of the population when it started, and it grew to have 700 million people be affected by it. But the really good thing about this, if you want to say anything about the good thing about this, is from everything that I have read in The Economist and Newsweek and Wikipedia and other sources, there was very, very little rioting. There was very little crime during these 2 days, because we have had outages in America, which I'll get to in a minute, but not to the scope that India has. But once you think about, you have a country that has close to 1,000 million people, which didn't come out right, sorry. But you have a lot more than what we would have. Yes, a lot more of what we would have in this country. And there was very little rioting and there was very little crime. I even have pictures here that came from the big cities, Punjab and New Delhi, about people waiting for the subway to go home from their jobs, and the subway isn't working because there's no power. And two women, one young and the other old, on their cell phones trying to reach somebody, but also helping each other at the subway station there, and people eating by candlelight, which, you know, when this country, we only think about eating by candlelight if we want to be romantic or the power goes out. But they had a whole slab of, like a church full of people eating by candlelight, and little boys getting their hair cut by candlelight. And in a way, it looks so pretty and romantic. But in another way, you're like, what would happen to you if you had to cook everything raw, or if you had to cut your hair by candlelight? Gives you another perspective about basically what's going on there. And
Well, I'd like to comment on that as far as some of that is also perception based on what people are accustomed to as well. I mean, there are many people who are consider it completely natural to live like that. I have a friend who's got an aunt. He's an African, and he's got an aunt that lives in Africa. She doesn't really pay a bill to live where she lives. She kind of lives in a hut, goes down, catches fish, washes her clothes, and kind of she just has this life. That's what she knows, is what she used to. And she doesn't necessarily consider herself to be poor. It's just what she knows. But what I'm saying is that there's the perception thing to consider, too, like the Western perception of what we consider a basic or non-impoverished life is, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
But you're right. For many people, there have been many people in India who have become accustomed, of course, to the modern.
They talk about that.
Yeah.
And this is not their only powder outage. This was the one that was the major one, the biggest one, because it was 2 days and so many things were affected. And there's, you know, a political fallout because there's the Prime Minister of India, Sahil Kumar Sindh, that was talking about that the electricity use was above normal, and it seemed like everybody at this particular grid was all using it at the time, and it just broke apart. And he's trying not to have the blame on himself, but at the other time, they were also talking about if there wasn't so many people in one particular area, this probably wouldn't happen. But India is having blackouts a lot. They've been really starting to have blackouts since the late 70s. So this is not really, oh, my God, type of moment for them. They've been living with power outages for a long time.
And that will bring me to another aspect that we'll talk to in a minute of this. So there's a few angles we're coming across here. Of course, Jeanine's got her sources from some places. I got mine from others. And, of course, I'm also bringing up the perception argument, not argument, but just perspective as well. There are different ways to view what an impoverished life is versus what somebody may think it is or is not. But one thing that I think is definitely something that India should look into and really should spend real resources on, especially for their major urban centers, is solar power. And there's plenty of sun.
Plenty of sun in India.
Yeah. And solar cells have come a long way from what they used to be. And I'm kind of away from the chat room here. I'm occasionally walking over to it. I'm on the other side of the room. And I'll occasionally come here and check it out if I am one sitting in my government's worst. Well, yeah. But what I'm going to do is we're just going to take a brief pause here. And we're going to play a song. I see Kevin Barrett is now in the chat room as well. Welcome,
okay.
Kevin. Good to see
good
you.
Good to see you.
Jeanine knew Kevin here from working with him at the television station. And this is going to be a song by our friends Woven Green, Sixth Sun. And we'll be back talking about the sun and talking about solar power a little bit. that was Woven Green, good friends of ours. And didn't get to see them Sunday. We were hoping to see them. But we're back and we're still talking about India and blackouts. And blackouts in the United States of America as well, we were going to discuss. Go ahead, Janice.
Yes. Well, the ones that happened here, the most notable was the Northeast blackout of 2003. Now, I know that's almost 10 years ago, but how that is noteworthy is that it took out a lot of the Canadian provinces and states, as well as New York City and Baltimore. I used to live in Baltimore, and I don't remember a blackout in 2003. But
you're having a good time.
Yes. Rochester, Syracuse, Buffalo, Orange, New Jersey. So it's the East Coast. A large portion of the East Coast was affected. In fact, they said that 300,000 people were affected. So that's a large chunk of the East Coast that was affected. And it had started at 4:10 in the afternoon, and it was out until 11 p.m. that day. So we're talking about a seven-hour blackout, even though they said there were some places in Canada that didn't have their power until 8 a.m. the next day, which would have been August 15th, because it had started Thursday, August 14th, 2003. So that's very significant because we all live, as you know, in the East Coast. And I had the pleasure of spending the weekend in New York City. And I can just imagine if New York City would go totally black for 7 hours, what kind of chaos that would come out with, because that's such a huge place. And also what's very irrelevant is that as in India, as in here, it started with a very big surge of hot weather. And, you know, the summer's been very hot. And we also had, in this particular summer in 2012, the derecho, which we had a very big storm that started, I think, about 9 o'clock or 9:30, about 3 weeks ago or maybe a month ago. And the power had went out for a while. And some places in Northern Virginia didn't have power again for another 3 or 4 days.
2 weeks, some people here.
Yeah.
2 weeks, some of the customers that come in to the store. So one interesting thing I'd like to, because Main Street Universe is often about what the individual can do about these things, or what the community can do as an extension of the individual. We like to say, okay, we like to talk about a story and then also say, how do we inspire ourselves to bring about the conditions that we want, either for ourselves or for the community? And to me, a big part of that is promoting the alternative energy.
Right.
And solar is an interesting one, and one that I definitely think applies in India. Now, in the U.S., you have windmill projects that they have started to do off the coast.
Yes.
That are supposedly unintrusive and all those things. I know nothing is perfect, but you have to try something. You know, there's no perfect answer to everything.
Well, outside of Chicago, they have a lot of wind machines.
In Massachusetts, they were putting some up, I think, outside of there on the coast. And there are many who would like to see India aggressively embrace a full-on solar program. And again, some people say that solar panels are expensive. And this is partially true, but innovations have been made. And there are solar technologies being made with smaller, almost paper-thin solar panels that they're putting in big, giant rolls now. Not those big, expensive, heavy aluminum things. I have mentioned before, there's a group called IUUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. And they've done some work that I thought was interesting, bringing solar power to very sun-filled places, of course. One of those was Vanuatu. And Vanuatu is made up of 83 Pacific islands, and Santo is one of them. And in Santo, schools and health clinics are being successfully powered by solar power, and they are well off the grid. These are disconnected islands. They have their own little grid for each little island. And prior to the solar power, various fuels were being used. So you don't kid yourself into thinking they were just living a life off the land. They were, and that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
And but they were using expensive fossil fuels, often imported. So again, not supporting themselves, but paying, you know, fossil fuel oil company folks to help them get done what they need, when they could just use these solar panels, which they're starting to do. In this group, IUCN is one of the groups trying to help them do that. Now, it's a renewable resource, and there's a few other different ones to be explored, some of them better than others. We mentioned windmills. We mentioned solar, of course. There's also geothermal, which is one that's sometimes specific to locations. And there's also biomass, which can be a little controversial sometimes. But I definitely think solar is just
a very good thing for India to think about.
Anybody, and especially people really off of a grid. You know, people like in the islands in Vanuatu in the Pacific, they're not connected to anything. So, you know, you have your panel, and it goes to your main transformers and electrical panels, and then it powers certain things in the village. They don't use it for a ton of things, but they do use them. And, again, they have powered health facilities as well, which is very important. And I'm sure they have their own folk health healing ways as well.
Correct.
And as well as eating local food, which is always good. And was there anything else about the blackouts you were going to mention, Janice? I thought you had...
Some of the things that they're trying to do in India is they're trying to do, with the help of the United States, of course, a $400 billion overhaul of their power grids. The Prime Minister, Hamana Singh, is looking for the United States, to help with that, and he likes to have at least a gigawatt of 76 gigawatts to fuel India by 2016. So that's 4 years from now. And that was reported with the Washington Post. And on August 1st of 2012, the same prime minister says that what they have to do is to stabilize the grid. And he is looking into other means of stabilizing the grid, and so they can work out a proper strategy so this doesn't happen again. But he doesn't want to start the blame game, which is obviously starting in India, that people are blaming each other, blaming the government, blaming forces, you know, the closet conspiracies and everything else that started with the blackout.
Okay. And again, it's just what is funny about these stories is, again, I was mentioning the point of perceptions, is once you get used to that sort of electronic life, like we're living right now on the air, it's having your power out for 2 days can seem devastating. Yeah. Whether it actually is as devastating as you think it is might be another story. But for some of these people, it truly is. You don't want hospitals closing down, and you don't want, like you said, incinerators, family having a relative burned for cremation and they burn halfway or other uses for those things as well. And we're coming down to about 29 minutes and 11 seconds left. And we are joined by a friend of mine here, and we'll maybe incorporate him into the conversation. But he's sort of here visiting to discuss something else that we are working on. So we're going to take a brief pause from our day's topic and say hello to our friend here, Mr. Mark Graywolf, who's going to be helping us with a video project.
Hi, Mark.
Hello, Mark, and here is your microphone. Kind of talk kind of across it like that.
Okay. Hi, everyone.
And how you doing today? How was the ride here? I know you're in Northern Virginia traffic. Wasn't
bad. Wasn't too bad, actually, yeah. Route 66 can be a little bit of a heavy, but it's not too bad.
Okay. And I want you to talk a little bit. If you want, I can do the introduction of it. What we're here to discuss is Mark is going to put together for us. He is someone who works in video and video graphicking. He's done some independent movies. He's done, I believe you've done a little bit of radio yourself, haven't you? Of some sort. I know you've also been an actor. You've been in plays. And as well as an attempt at a musician every once in a while as well. But your main thing now, I guess your main passion now is video, video graphics, video art. And we're going to make sort of a professional-looking, or as professional-looking as we can, sort of movie trailer commercial to hopefully put on YouTube and make it viral for Main Street Universe, the network. And Mark is going to help us do that. And let's also get a little bit more about your credentials. You've done work for the Home and Garden channel before?
HTTV.
Yeah.
And I was actually part of that demo.
Yes.
Remember, I got you that job. I remember.
Yeah. You.
Not really. But what happened was I was the one narrating the video that he used as his demo. And you did about, what, 7 or 8 episodes of HGTV?
Yeah, 7 or 8. National Geographic was the other one. So, yeah, you did a great job.
Oh, cool. And did they mention the smooth, wonderful voice of your narrator at any point for your demo?
They did.
Did they really? Oh, good.
They said you did a good job.
Oh, cool. But nobody called me for any voiceover work.
I'm waiting for my check, too.
Yeah. Are they cheap? Are they cheap down there at Home and Garden Television?
Might be too busy working on their gardens. I don't know.
Nothing check. But anyway, so that's some of Mark's history, and I know there's some other things I just don't have on the list right now. I know he had been involved with theater for a lot of his life. And there's one other piece of history, then we'll go on to the film, that I just remembered. It just came to my mind, and I wasn't going to mention it, but there was the only play I've ever been in my life. I'm not an actor. I'm a musician. And it was called The Pirates of the Chesapeake. Mark can't even look at me right now. And we jumped onto this boat. The boat was in Baltimore City. It was called the Chesapeake. And long story short, somebody would hire the actor group to come in on a rowboat. One of our actors was like an 80-year-old woman, so whoever's bright idea this was. And then we had to climb up onto the boat and then jump on there, unsuspecting to the people, except for the person running the party that was out on the boat. So we would jump on and do an unexpected play, not on a stage, but amidst the people, like, drinking and trying to pick each other up. And we're running around doing what was kind of a G-rated and almost childish pirate play, if I remember correctly. It was just a fun, silly, strange experience, and we jumped on singing pirate songs, and that was the only acting experience I ever had, and I got paid for it, so I used to rub that into the noses of my actor friends. It was only $50, but hey, I was like, yeah, I don't know what you guys are complaining about. I acted once, I got paid for it, but anyway, that's part of our history as well. But Mark, describe to us a little bit about the process and what we may be seeing in the future here and what you'll be going through.
Sure, happy to, Dan. So basically, with the way that a trailer like this is created is through the pre-production, production, and post-production process. I won't go into like a lot of detail, but just to kind of give you a quick overview, when you create a trailer like this, it depends on how much people, resources, and budget you have. And then based on that, that helps you decide the scope of the project. In the pre-production phase, you have a creative vision. So you brainstorm some ideas. Do we want somebody walking down a long, dark corridor with a cloak on? Or, you know, it's more whiz-bang with special effects. And, you know, that's part of the brainstorming. It's kind of the fun part. Kind of like when you were a kid, you just think, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? Or wouldn't it be cool if we did that? So that's part of it. It can involve one person or a small group. I think the more people, the better. You also look at the resources. You know, what kind of production equipment do you have? How much existing video do you have? Do you have to shoot new video? Graphics. Do you have a graphic designer that you can use? Are there going to be on-screen actors? Do you have someone doing a voiceover? You know, a dark and stormy night, that kind of thing. And music. You know, do you buy music, or do you have musicians that you can tap into to actually create the jingle or the music in the background for the trailer? After all that's kind of cataloged, then you can go to the storyboarding phase, which is when you bring it to life by mapping out the idea visually, maybe on just a piece of white paper or on PowerPoint. Then moving quickly on to production, what we would do is shoot the video, you know, create the graphics, direct the actors, record the music, and then as we go through this process, if there's any changes that are needed, we'd go ahead and make those, acquire any new footage, et cetera. Because that can always happen when you're going through a project like this. And then finally, the post-production phase is when you review all the video and elements and edit them together in a rough draft. And then however many people review the project, they review it, and you require any remaining elements. Then everybody takes a final last look at it. Does it look good? Is it creative enough? Does it inspire the audience? Does it prompt them to want to take action and, you know, look at the show? All that's considered, and then you complete the trailer. So in a nutshell, that's pretty much what's involved in creating a promotional trailer. But again, this can vary based on, you know, the resources available, and you're only limited by your creativity.
Yes, so we'll be looking forward to that soon. And I know you've done TV work. You also worked on a children's show, Candy and Cupcake. It was hard for me to get that one out. I love Candy, though. She's a great woman. She also was with us for the pirate thing. But you've also done other things for public television and other assignments. And I, you know, wish you luck in your pursuit of a career in video media. And I look forward to doing this project. I'm curious, you used to live in this Fairfax area, did you not? Or you went to Mason, I think, for a time.
Well, actually, you're right on both accounts. Went to Mason, actually lived in Fair Oaks. So.
Yeah, that's not far from here, Fair Oaks Mall and all that. And did you ever have any experience at, Denise does here, at the Fairfax public television station?
The
Access television here, or radio at Fairfax, did you ever?
I believe I was involved in some volunteer work with them, and when I was in my undergraduate degree, I did work on some radio commercials when I was focused on advertising as a degree. So I actually wrote up a commercial for Golden's Mustard, not the most exciting topic, but fun. But the whole advertising, though.
It's actually my favorite condiment. That's right. Golden's and Grey Poupon and all the great stone ground mustards and all those different varieties in the world. And Denise here, she has a reggae show on that network, and she's now officially in their program written up. We were discussing that.
Congratulations.
Yes, I have a radio show. It's a reggae radio show, World Reggae Party, Thursday nights from 7 to 8 at Radio Fairfax, which is 27 on Verizon and 37 on Cox, every Thursday.
And is there an online presence for people to maybe listen to your show online or on archive or even live online? Does it have a line?
www.radiofairfax.com, I believe. There's also a streaming market there, too, but I don't remember what the www is.
Okay. You can look it up, Google it up, Fairfax Public Access Television and Radio, or maybe even if they Google up the name of your show.
Yeah, World Reggae Party or FPA, www.fpa.com, I believe.
Okay. And, Mark, are there any other projects that you're working on that you would like to promote? Well, we have a little bit of airtime. Or anything else? I remember for a while you were working on an independent film. I don't know how that went.
Yeah, it was called Henry Dodd. So, yeah, worked on that for a while. So I am doing some freelance work again. Primarily, my primary job now. I'm also doing a training, but I'm interested in edutainment, which is a way of educating people, educational programming, including video, but in a way of educating people through entertaining means, whether it's through innovative courses, but also through video. I'm also going to be doing more of these types of trailers on a freelance basis and other types of videos. So.
Okay.
Yeah, and I hope that you get to use this trailer. We're passing the microphones around here. We got three people and two mics. I hope you get to use this trailer as some sort of demo, and I can get you some more work in the big time media like I did last time on cable. I'm just playing Garden Television. And I do remember another project Mark and I did work on, and that was a commercial where I did a song for the commercial, and it was for a bar called the Cincinnati Cafe. And I just wrote this really corny bass line that was like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- And and the guy, you know, comes on, and he didn't have us narrate it, though. He had another narrator for it, but I did the song, and it was on air, and then it closed down not that long after our commercial aired, so I don't know if that was our fault. And, you know, it looks like we do have a caller, and we got about 17 minutes left. I'm going to go ahead and take this caller. And our caller is calling us from 614. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Street Universe.
Hello, it's Kevin.
Kevin Baird, hello.
How are you?
Drums in here today, or I'd be hitting cymbals and everything.
Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
Yes, happy Wednesday. And
show sounds good.
Cool.
Thank you. How's Ohio?
It's very quiet compared
yes,
to this.
I've been there.
And I live in a burb that I really want to call a shire. It's like a town of like 4,000
a shire.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, a
yeah.
shire. Sounds
yeah.
like a very
I
small
took
town.
A,
how tall are those people?
Yeah, I was walking down one of the side streets and I took a picture of, you know, like one of the roads, and I posted that as my Facebook profile so you guys can see, you know, what the roads look like. But I live in a very current era kind of house, that kind of thing, but it's just interesting how there's like a split between, you know, like I was walking around the cemetery and I saw some gravestones that had like 1802 on it for the
Ooh.
Person that died. So this
yeah.
place, I think, has been around
for
since
a long 1700s. Time.
So, yeah. So it's given me a chance to look at things, you know, on a small scale, but exactly what I've been studying over the last few years, too. So, a new level of, I guess, discovery and exploration. But I just want to call into the show, you know, get established with you guys as a phone contact.
You wanted to establish as a phone contact.
Absolutely, and
yeah.
Glad you called.
Yeah.
And I guess you heard, if you were there, I saw you in the chat room. I'm kind of walking back and forth towards the chat room, so I see some things and then come back. You know how it is. You've been here. Back to my music stand.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I would like to let everybody know that this is Kevin Baird, our old co-host and still member of the Main Street Universe network, of course, for our highest-rated show on Friday nights, Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle Journey. And Kevin is the creator of the Horizon Oracle deck. And I guess if you've been listening, you've heard my friend Mark here, Mark Graywolf, who's going to be making a sort of a video promo for us to make it look like a movie trailer for the network. And it may be just something that's like a movie trailer commercial and trying to make it look professional. And I think I talked to you about it before.
You could probably post that. You could probably post that on the Main Street Universe wall on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And when we finish it, I'm working on like a narration, which I'll probably get together with you about that as well.
Okay.
And work on graphics and ideas. And like I said, Mark does have some film experience and some professional experience as well in the industry, and is always looking for new little projects to do and be involved with when possible.
Sounds fantastic.
Now he has a son, so
those things happen. And so, Kevin, say hi to Mark.
Hey, Kevin. Nice to
Hello,
meet
Mark.
You.
How are you?
Doing great.
Thanks,
thanks
for joining the team there. Thanks for joining the team.
Great. I appreciate that. I'm excited to be here.
We're excited to have you.
Mm-hmm. The more the merrier. And I'm sure Daniel explained to you that we're trying to build the network of people who are pushing how to live life beyond the cube. And you guys were talking about power today, where it's like, you know, we're so dependent upon power. That, in a sense, has blocked us in, has, like, imprisoned us into the cubicle world of needing power, whether it's for our cell phones, for light, for the computer, for television, for cable, that kind of stuff. So I think how many people were lost power in India, was it? I missed the number.
700 million.
There's been a few different numbers thrown around there according to different sources, but yeah, there's been a lot.
I wanted to know your take about that, so I'm glad that you chimed in and told us your take.
Well, I think it could be that the power company needed to do an upgrade on a grand scale, and that they just had to bring people down, move the new equipment in, get it installed, and then bring everybody back online again.
Correct.
I've actually been part of projects like that before, where we would, as an electrician, I've been an industrial electrician, where they would shut down the power plant, and we would have to go in there, and they're like, it was really pressed for time, so you might be there all day and night. They're like, we have to get this back on grid, or the federal government fines them, the power plant, a certain amount of money.
Right.
And it's kind of a high anxiety environment to be
mm-hmm.
in.
Well, one of the things that I had said is that the prime minister wants to do this $400 billion, as in billion with a B, overhaul of all these different power plants and these different grids with the United States help, of course. And he wants to have this all done by 2016, which is only 4 years, or by the time the next Olympics come about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Olympics is going to be, is in India?
Oh, that I do not.
I have no idea. Oh, no, it's supposed to be in Rio de Janeiro.
That's right, Rio.
Okay.
Yes.
You're getting all kinds of trouble down there.
I've been to Rio. It's a hot place. So, and I'm not talking about the heat either. So.
There'd
be a lot of parties down there, trust me.
You saw the Olympics in London, and all the power that they used to like run the lighting and the stadium and everything as well. But that was a phenomenal show, and I don't know that anybody will be able to meet what the UK did as far as like presenting.
Oh, it was a wonderful Olympics. I talked about that last week. They did an excellent job. So I don't know what Mitt Romney was talking about, because it blew me away, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to look at it, but I ended up looking at the whole 2 weeks of it.
Yeah, that's another issue for another day.
I know. Sorry.
I want to mention a couple other things. We're talking about updates, and since the show is taking still on topic a little bit, but a slightly casual turn, I'd like to mention some updates we're doing. As you can see, this publication in front of me right here, you've probably seen before. I'm going to buy an ad in this, and Kevin knows what this is. It's Pathways Magazine. So at some point in the near future,
awesome.
It's a quarterly. And
ad there too.
And so I'm going to put in a nice, affordable ad in there, and it'll help establish us as, oh, this is the, you know, this is Main Street Universe, this is the esoteric, you know, whatever, new age, topical, interesting show, the official one, because I don't see another radio show with an ad in here that's like ours anyway.
No, and I don't see any radio shows. That's what I was thinking about, getting World Reggae Party on there.
Yeah. And it's a very popular publication that a lot of people read. I know I pretty much read it. In fact, it's funny, I just opened it up and saw it. I just passed it on the page. Reverend Trish, who has been a guest on our show before, and Reverend Trish is part of the Science of the Mind Church, if they're still calling themselves that. And they're very much into, like, law of attraction and that kind of thing.
Yes. I just bought an ad for my Reiki practice because I have a part-time Reiki practice as well.
Oh, okay.
So I'm hoping that Pathways would guide me to the next path, so to speak.
Yeah. So I will be buying an ad in this. And also in here, coming locally, is a speaker that I like. People have different opinions, but I still think he's a good speaker, and that's the Reverend Michael Bernard Beckwith is coming to Hunt Valley, Maryland, which I know exactly the hotel he's going to be in. I've done electrical work.
Secret, right? He was in The
yeah.
Secret?
Yes. His wife's actually a pretty good singer-songwriter, and he'll be there Friday, September 14th, and Saturday the 15th, speaking there. Don't have an idea of what the prices are. They want you to call for that. But he is the Science of the Mind Church I mentioned with Reverend Trish is sort of an offshoot of Agape International. They're kind of like an allied interfaith group. So that should be an interesting motivation, sort of inspirational lecture, I think. And I just found that in Pathways as I was turning through it. And another thing that is funny is I have another one marked here, and it has a picture of the tarot card, the Hermit. And the Hermit is interesting because our co-host, our third co-host for Main Street Universe, is going to be starting his show soon, and his name is Brett Hillman. And his show is going to be called The Main Street Hermit, and he always pulls up the Hermit card every time he messes around with his tarot deck. It's like his card right now. And anybody that
very cool
reads the cards knows that there's time periods in your life where you keep getting that same card over and over. And this one is actually comparing the Hermit and the tarot to certain values found in Christ. I won't go into the article right now, but I thought that was funny. This morning, right before the show, I opened up this Pathways magazine, and bam, there's the Hermit looking at me. And I just talked to Brett recently. So my thoughts instantly went to him. So he'll be returning, and he'll have his own show. Probably on Tuesdays, I think, is the day he's going to want it. In the late evening, I believe, is what his desire was for his time slot. And so it'll be called The Main Street Hermit. And as our ratings continue to increase, and I'm getting a marketing team from George Mason to help us with all these things. So we're branching out and expanding. And, of course, the video.
Yes, and that's a good thing.
Video movie trailer review that we're going to, movie trailer style ad that we're going to do. Maybe it'll become viral on YouTube or something like that. And everybody will go, what's Main Street Universe? So
good.
Today we have been discussing
many topics.
Many topics, but they all are connected, as all things are. We started off with inspiration during times of tragedy and strife and poverty and war, which is on the theme of Main Street Universe, because we talk about, even no matter how bad something is, what can you do to reach in and find your inspiration? And so we brought some real life stories of people who found music in an inspiration in what you might think are unlikely places, such as in the war-torn Congo after the mass genocide there, or in the concentration camps in Germany, or in the siege of Sarajevo, the gentleman Vidran Smolovic, who would go and play in the destroyed buildings while the war was going on around him, playing his cello, and became known for this. And these are real people doing real things. The one woman started a all-female orchestra in Auschwitz, in a concentration camp. Her name was Alma Rose, and that was another story. So we then drifted on to talking about the blackouts, power, and what can be done, as well as what are the perceptions of how much do you need that power. But of course, we live modern lives. The world's getting smaller. So if we're talking about living modern lives, we have to think of the best ways. In my opinion, for some of these regions, solar is one of the best options, and the panels are getting cheaper. And your savings, even after the expensive panels, honestly, if you can initially afford them, or if a government or a group or a company can initially afford them, you're getting pretty much free power from the sun after that, except for you maintain the equipment. You maintain your panels and transformers and, of course, devices and lights and all those other sorts of things. So you have a basic maintenance that you have anyway with any kind of power.
Right.
Without the residue of
Yule and things burning. It all comes down to this, because I'm an electrician. All of our power that we're looking for comes down to making something turn inside of a generator with electromagnetic force. So it all comes down to, whether it's geothermal, we're trying to get something to spin.
Right.
And when that thing spins and can kind of do it on its own with electromagnetic force, or mostly on its own until the resource runs out, it sends power to a transformer, lessens the voltage, and then sends it out to all the people.
Right, to different houses. And
why we don't have wires that are the size of the doorway or this house.
Yes.
Basically, we can thank Nikola Tesla for that.
Very important man.
Tesla helped with reduction of power to make it reasonable in your house. And some say he even was working on ambient energy powered devices. Some of those are more controversial. I actually knew a guy, again, I don't know if he was telling the truth, but he said he actually saw a test run of an ambient energy, that's what it was called, ambient energy car, that he said ran off the ambient energy in the atmosphere. Don't know if he's telling the truth, but I met some old guy that claimed he saw a demonstration of this and said he never heard of it or saw it again.
What is ambient energy?
Well, some people think they might be referring to something similar to orgone energy, if you've ever heard of those theories, such as with the William Reich and his orgone energy accumulator, which was claimed to be used as a weather-altering machine. Around, in the early 1900s, and this guy, it was a series of pipes that went into the air. Funny, not that many parts. And it claimed to collect what he called orgone energy in the atmosphere. And he had the other ends of the pipes hooked up to water. And I don't know the specifics of the adjustments he made, but he claimed if he aimed it a certain way that he could cause it to rain. There was a song about it by Kate Bush in the 1980s called Cloudbuster. And there was a video about it, and it's her and Donald Sutherland, the actor Donald Sutherland, running around, and he's pointing this fancy device into the sky, which was probably fancier than what was actually the one in real life. But it was a video. It was drama. But anyway, we can talk about all these things later. Thank you very much for joining us today, Mark.
Thanks.
And thank you very much, Janice.
Thank you for listening.
And remember, everybody, that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. I don't know about you, but I can imagine a lot.
And the magic of dusk.